All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce E. Castle presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Chief Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Lance. We're here today in the matter of Annette Briley. It has a docket number of 111579. Would counsel of the parties please note their appearance for the record?
Sandra Booth on behalf of Annette Briley.
Thank you, Sandra. Are both parties, excuse me, go ahead. Thank you, Jessica. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time?
I would request 8 minutes, Your Honor.
8 minutes for rebuttal. Please note that, and you may proceed.
If it pleases the court, Sandra Booth on behalf of Annette Briley. There are two general matters before the court today, the first being the merits issue, which the parties briefed, and the second being the supplemental briefing order from the court. With the court's permission, I'd like to address the supplemental briefing order first.
Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. Could I ask you please to speak a little louder? I have a difficulty hearing.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, and I speak softly. I'll try to...
My fault, not yours.
...pay attention to that. Again, with the court's permission, I would like to address the supplemental briefing order matter first in the argument. It's my view, and I've not confirmed this with Ms. Swartz, but it's my view on reading both of the parties' submissions that we are largely in agreement. I think at this point, rather than rereading memoranda that you all have already read, it might be helpful to the parties if the court could offer some guidance on the matters that you feel we have not adequately addressed in our memorandum of law.
Well, I think if you don't get any questions, then we're satisfied.
Well, I hope that's...
If there are any questions.
Hope that's the case. I would like to make one remark in response to question number three. Does characterization of the disposition of an unargued claim have a preclusive effect if COE is later filed? I initially said in my memorandum that I felt it would have a preclusive effect. In light of the Bissonnette decision, which I filed as supplemental authority yesterday, I believe that the fact that a mere affirmance does not address the merits would bar, does not trigger claims preclusion. So it would not have a preclusive effect, in my view, if the claimant later appealed. I do think it is confusing to use the terminology affirmed and perhaps suggest to the board that there has been a merits decision.
But as I understand it, your position, and I believe you agreed that the Secretary's position was that if you'd simply abandoned, then it's not decided and therefore there's no preclusive effect with regard to those abandoned matters.
That is correct.
Okay. I think.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Going to the merits, at the time of Mr. Briley's death from colon cancer, he had evidence in the claim file of the three criteria necessary to prove service connection. Number one, he had proof of...
Assume for argument's sake, we say, can't use a dictionary. Nobody can use a dictionary. This is an accrued benefits claim.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with it? You can't add to the file.
Under 5107B, the regulations, I think at 3.102 and 3.103, require the decision to be made on the basis of all evidence of record. The evidence of record at that time included those two medical nexus opinions. They are unrebutted by any medical evidence of record.
That's not quite true, is it? I mean, you can't ignore a statute that tells the Secretary that he has to take all the evidence out there, and when it equals or is greater than a positive showing of a nexus, mm-hmm. and ignore it, can you? It is evidence, is it not?
I'm sorry.
The NAS studies, the Secretary has not added it to the presumptive list.
Well, on the various items that the board relied upon for the reasons stated in the brief, and I'd like to summarize them very quickly, those are not evidence. The NAS reports are not evidence as
well. The fact it's not added to the statute of the presumptive list is evidence, is it not?
It is evidence that there is an insufficient, that the Secretary has determined there's an insufficient statistical association to support an overall presumption of service connection. It is not evidence in any particular case of whether
correct,
there is direct service
connection.
Correct,
both of the opinions that are in this file are pretty much a statistical analysis by one doctor saying the studies say this, the NAS says that, and I think therefore colon cancer is service-connected. There's nothing specific with this veteran, is there?
Well, neither of the medical opinions in the file, in my view, are perfect. They leave a lot of things to be discussed, and the board identified those things. But perfection is not required under the equipoise rule. The evidence that is in the file
is... Make it clear. A doctor comes in and says, I think colon cancer is connected. And the secretary has all these obligations to weigh all the evidence, statistics, analysis, et cetera, and when it's equal to or greater of a nexus, it gets on the presumptive list. That's evidence.
Mm-hmm.
That evidence has not come forth to where the secretary's put it on the presumptive list. And I have one doctor who says, basically, I think colon cancer is connected.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how you're saying you can't weigh those two?
No, we have... I think you cannot weigh it in the individual case on a direct service connection
theory. Well, how is this tied to this individual, I guess is what I'm saying. We don't have a whole analysis saying he's never been exposed to radiation, he's not this, he's not that. We don't have all these factors that would go into a doctor saying, in your case, the colon cancer is connected because of X, Y, and Z. All we have is a doctor's opinion that says, well, I think it's connected.
Well, we have two doctors' opinions, and one of them says that he, in his view, he connects, and I think the board construed it this way, adenocarcinoma, which was this veteran's particular diagnosis of the colon, as a soft tissue sarcoma. He found that the finding...
But he never connected. Let's take the dictionaries out of here. Mm-hmm. Where did the doctor connect this specific type of carcinoma found through the lab tests in this case to soft cell?
The at page 892 of the record, third paragraph, he states that the veteran's colon cancer, the cancer that was found in his colon, is consistent with the findings of soft tissue sarcoma. That statement is supporting evidence. It's positive evidence supporting that that there is nexus. Now the question is, what evidence is there that undercuts that? What evidence can the secretary rely on?
But even if you get to soft tissue sarcoma, not all soft. How does that get it to service connection? He's just basically saying soft tissue sarcoma generally is related, and therefore I think this is related. But the studies have been done that say soft tissue sarcoma, a lot of them are related, but some are not. And
well,
this isn't one of those that's related. You're still on a high level of just kind of that statistical analysis. Where are you connecting this veteran?
I would disagree, Your Honor. I think that the studies do not say they are not connected. They say there is not a sufficient statistical base to support presumptive.
So why would one doctor saying, well, I think it is enough, be sufficient to carry the day?
That doctor is particularly looking at the veteran's cancer, his adenocarcinoma, which is not recognized as a presumptively service-connected sarcoma.
Does he even mention adenocarcinoma?
He does not. And
so why do you say he was looking at that?
Because he is referring to the veteran's colon cancer, and there's no question that that was the veteran's laboratory diagnosis, adenocarcinoma, as opposed to a more general soft tissue sarcoma diagnosis. But there's no question that that was the veteran's diagnosis, and he's referring to the veteran's colon cancer. Again, this could have been better written, no question about that. But does the secretary's evidence push back enough to preponderate against this, particularly with the other doctor, the second doctor, Dr. Campbell, again, we wouldn't be here talking today if he had shared more rationale, but he does provide some rationale. He looks at the two risk factors that he's aware of and concludes that the veteran does not have one risk factor. He does have the other, which is the dioxin exposure, and on that basis finds that it is more likely that it was related, the colon cancer is related to his exposure. Now, are there other risk factors? I don't know, but it's not reflected in the record either. The Secretary has nothing to point at that would undercut the probative value of Dr. Campbell's view in light of the two risk factors that are disclosed in the record. I would also note that the BVA or those NAS findings were not of record at the time of the veteran's death. I think that runs into runs afoul of 5121A regarding the accrued benefits restriction on the board or the veteran, relying on evidence that was not of record at the time of the veteran's death.
Counselor, let me jump ahead here a little bit.
Yes.
If I could, please. Your objection is not so much that they used a dictionary to look up and define terms. It is, then what did they do with the definitions? Isn't that accurate?
Well, I have a problem with the fact they used the terms, but the stronger case certainly is that the board had to use its own medical judgment to look at those terms and then make a conclusion that is not found in those Dorland definitions. That's certainly a strong objection, that the board simply wasn't competent to make that conclusion. Had there been a medical opinion that made that conclusion that no, those two are completely separate, or they bear no relationship to each other, we'd be talking about a different case. But that's not our case. We have no evidence that those are different, unrelated cancers.
But the way your case was developed, it suggests that it's objection primarily to use of dictionaries versus once you've gotten the terms defined, then what do you do with them? If that makes any sense. And the board in this case went a step further other than just understanding what the terms meant, which may be permissible, may not be, and then made some judgment based upon what they discovered in the medical dictionary.
Well, certainly. I think it's a dangerous territory to get into to say that the board may rely on treatise evidence not of record in the form of dictionary definitions, because no matter what those dictionary definitions are, in most cases, I would think certainly in something as complex as cancer diagnoses and cancer causes, you're going to run the risk that a lay witness does not really understand the science behind the dictionary definition, and that So I do have a problem with the dictionary definition itself being used, but certainly the bigger, more obvious problem in this case is, as you've mentioned, Judge Lance, that the board then took another step, and that other step, in our view, is not permitted by law.
So you're not abandoning, then, on page 12 of your brief, you, yeah, I think, make both of those arguments. I'll just read it to you. It says, however, Dorland's evidence, which forms the basis for the board's analysis, was not of record. And then it goes on. And then say, even assuming that Dorland's evidence could be considered, and then you go into the analysis section, are you abandoning that first part that says that you have an objection with the inclusion or the use, I shouldn't say the use, the inclusion of the Dorland's definitions in the board's opinion? or not?
I am not abandoning, don't
okay.
Your Honor, no.
Okay.
That's correct. I would also like to take a moment to discuss a matter that the Secretary addressed in the responsive brief regarding the citation to Nieves-Rodriguez and the language in that case that essentially says that medical opinion evidence which is not supported by sufficient rationale is entitled to no weight or has no probative value. That seems to me to be the Secretary's strongest case against these two medical opinions that support nexus, and I would like to discuss for just a few minutes why I think that's incorrect. Number one, that language does indeed show up in Nieves-Rodriguez, but it is not, in my view, the holding of Nieves-Rodriguez. That was not the issue before the court in that case. Number two...
Could you explain that, please? I'm sorry. Could you explain that, please?
Statement. Yes. That it was not the holding?
Correct.
Yes. The issue in Nieves-Rodriguez the court was confronted with was whether the board or the agency is required to inform the veteran that a copy of his claim file can be provided to his private medical expert for use in preparation of an opinion. And the court held that that was not required because that presupposes that the board will categorically reject opinions that are not premised on a review of the claim file. The court then went ahead and discussed how the board should review probative value and how the court would be looking at the board's review of probative value. If you look at that case, though, that case and every other recent case that I've been able to find, the question isn't whether the board can reject and not consider at all supporting medical evidence, but rather, how when there is competing medical evidence, how should the board analyze the preponderance of the evidence question? What weight to assign to those two or three competing opinions or competing pieces of medical evidence? In this case, unlike Nieves-Rodriguez, there are no competing medical opinions. The medical opinions are quite clear. And they're in support of nexus, and there's nothing to rebut those opinions in the record. I would also argue that if Nieves-Rodriguez were construed so narrowly, that it would run afoul of 5107B, which obliges the board to consider all medical evidence of record, and that the Nieves-Rodriguez analysis is based on the federal rules of evidence, but the purpose of the federal rules of evidence or the outcome of their application is to exclude evidence from the jury, from the trier of fact. We don't have something comparable. We have just the opposite in the VA disabilities adjudication system through 5107B, requiring all evidence to be considered. And I think that's also consistent with the Federal Circuit's decision in the Fagan case, which affirmed this court's application of 5107B, but also made quite clear the agency must consider all evidence of record, all medical and lay evidence of record.
So following, the Secretary did argue that they're entitled to no weight, but the board didn't actually go that route, did it? In fact, the 07 private physician, they just said it was given, it reduced the probative value of the opinion. And the other 06 letter was given no probative weight, but that was based on the board's analysis that the two didn't that the biochemist was not talking about the same type of carcinoma that was found in this particular
mm-hmm.
case,
mm-hmm.
which I understand you dispute
mm-hmm.
on that, but that's why they gave it no probative value.
Mm-hmm.
So the board didn't actually do what the Secretary is arguing does.
The board did not, but I think that if the board doesn't have that or the Secretary doesn't have that argument to fall back on, I don't think there is any basis in this case for the Secretary to defend the board's decision because
Because you said there's no other evidence.
Because there is no other evidence. The secretary must do something to show that the evidence preponderates, cannot rely upon.
But in the context of this case, and this is what I just want to go back again, the statute, 1116B2, requires the secretary to consider not only the NAS, but all other sound medical and scientific information analysis, and then to find a positive nexus, if you will, if the credible evidence is equal to or greater than. That's a statute. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not evidence per se as they put it into the record, but mm-hmm. the statute, it's that negative evidence that, why can't the board weigh that? And contrary to that, you have one doctor saying, I believe it is, and another doctor saying, in this case, the soft tissue sarcoma, and we have that other mm-hmm. dispute mm-hmm. that exists there. I'm trying to understand why you say there's no evidence against it when there's this negative evidence.
I don't, under Steffel and I think Polovic recently mm-hmm. also, the court has made clear that the NAS findings are not relevant to direct service connection. They don't rule out direct service connection. Now, the statistical association and whether there's a the equal amount of evidence or more than likely evidence of a statistical association, again, it goes back to a different issue. It's apples and oranges. We're talking about whether or not presumptive service connection, which is very powerful and frankly very expensive finding for the secretary to arrive at, not certainly the secretary shouldn't when the evidence supports it, but it's a different issue than the individual service connection of any individual claim.
I agree with that, and I think Polovic made it clear that you could have direct, but also pointed out that that if you just take one doctor's opinion without any specific supporting analysis, mm-hmm. is that not just saying that this doctor's opinion outweighs all the statistics that the secretary didn't believe rose to the level of showing a nexus? And wouldn't we just have everyone go out and find the one doctor who said there's a connection?
Well, everyone could go out and find that one doctor.
Certainly a lot of people believe there's a connection. I mean, there's no doubt that a lot of people believe there's a nexus.
Certainly, but...
This doctor in 2007 said he believed there was a nexus.
Yes.
And effectively, in 2006, the doctor said he believed there was a nexus. And that's all we really have, don't we?
Well, if there's nothing to rebut that, that's sufficient. Again, the NAS findings don't address this particular veteran. They're limited to the question of whether the evidence is so overwhelming that in every case we should just presume it.
I don't think that's what it says here. It says equal to or outweighs the credible evidence.
Equal to or outweighs.
That's not quite overwhelming.
It goes to the issue, though, of statistical association, whether or not it supports presumptive service connection, whether the secretary should just across the board excuse the need for individual claimants.
Although
to come
it's not
forward.
Just statistical, it's medical also.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. But it refers to a really different issue here, and that's the policy, for lack of a better word, of whether or not the evidence is sufficiently compelling to support the issue of presumptive across the board service.
And I've been negligent in my duties. You are out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Apologize.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Secretary submits that the Court should affirm that portion of the Board's decision that denied appellant's claim for entitlement to accrued benefits for colon cancer because the Board properly weighed the evidence and found that there was no probative evidence connecting the veteran's colon cancer to his exposure to Agent Orange in service. The appeals to the remainder of the decision should be dismissed.
Now, did they find no probative evidence? Because that looks to me like they had reduced probative evidence with regard to the 07 opinion.
Is that Dr. Campbell's opinion, Your Honor? For Dr. Campbell's opinion, yes, they did find that there was reduced probative evidence. And in response to your question to Ms. Booth, I reread it, and it does look like they found that the probative value outweighed the negative evidence. Excuse me. The NAS findings outweighed the
So you might want to just adjust your
Yes, Your Honor. You're right there. However, that doesn't change the Secretary's position here, which is that there...
Excuse me, I'm sorry to interrupt you now. But if we could go back to that probative value matter, how would you explain that the board's finding of fact, excuse me, I'm sorry, that on page 4 of the decision, that there's no competent evidence as opposed to probative evidence. That's a finding of fact that the board makes as opposed to its general discussion in the latter part of the opinion or decision.
Yes, Your Honor. As the Secretary explained in his brief, there's two alternative bases for explaining that finding. The first is that the court has found in several cases that just because an opinion is rendered by a medical examiner or medical personnel, that opinion is not necessarily competent to
I agree with that.
Okay.
I'm just asking you, how do you reconcile a clear finding of fact that it is not competent, that these medical opinions are not competent, with the later discussion that there is little or no probative value? If something is not competent, what effect does that have on our ability or the board's ability to consider it? Let me ask it that way.
Well, it would seem, Your Honor, that if it's not competent, then it wouldn't be entitled to any probative value.
That's correct. They couldn't consider it.
It could
right?
be considered as having any probative value, which then leads to the second point that the Secretary pointed out in his brief, which is this could have been a minor drafting error on behalf of the board.
Looks to me like in the finding of fact,
Yes, Your Honor, but it doesn't...
That's your explanation, in other words. Okay, thank you.
Yes, Your Honor, and it doesn't change the outcome, the Secretary believes, of the case.
I'm sorry?
It doesn't change the outcome of the case. Because
Why not?
Either way...
If there's no... okay, if there's no probative... If there's no competent evidence, if that's true, okay... And we would accept, and it's your position, that the NAS study is competent evidence. Indeed, it is persuasive evidence. Wouldn't that change the outcome of the case in the Secretary's favor?
Either way, Your Honor, the Secretary's position is that there's no evidence, probative, competent, what have you, in favor of the veteran's claim, providing a nexus. So in that case, under Skozin, this court found that, or possibly it was the Federal Circuit.
Well, you just said, as I recall, that the board found that there was some probative value to one of the medical opinions that was offered by the appellant, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The board did.
So there is some. So your statement just then said there's no competent or probative value is in error, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
The board, and this is where the board's decision wasn't worded as concisely as it could have been.
Should we take the board's view of life, or should we take your view, the Secretary's view and argument of how we should consider this?
If the court believes that the board was proper in considering the NAS findings to support its opinion, contrary to what appellants believe arguments are, then yes, the court should take what the board said on its face. However, if the court disagrees with the Secretary's position that the NAS findings were appropriate to rely on, in that case, the Secretary still submits that there's a lack of sufficient evidence to support appellant's claim, in which case the court should take the Secretary's interpretation.
Okay, thank you.
Which then brings me back to the original point that either way, the Secretary believes he'll be successful in the claim.
I understand your position.
So if there's no competent evidence, the appellant would lose?
Yes, Your Honor.
And if the board made that finding but then went ahead and evaluated it and found low probative value, the appellant loses?
Yes, Your Honor. And again, that goes back to, in Skozin, unless it is the veteran's job to prove his or her claim. And if there is no probative and or competent evidence in support of that
after
claim.
After the Secretary has provided the full duty to assist,
yes,
et cetera.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Now, wait, again.
That's always an interesting line.
you're changing your language here on me. You just said if there's no probative value, but the board didn't say that. They said little probative value.
I apologize, Your Honor. Either competent, no, or little probative value. Any of those three.
It's important, I think.
Okay. Yes, Your Honor. Any of those three, the outcome remains the same for the secretary.
Well, wait a minute. Any of those three, which is it? What is the secretary's position? Little probative value or no probative value? What is your position? What is the secretary's position? Excuse me.
The secretary's position is that there is little probative value.
Thank you.
Unless the court disagrees with our position on the NAS findings. No, I'm sorry. That does not change the response. There is little probative value. Again, to one of the cases before this court in Combi, the court explained that proving actual causation is a very difficult burden of proof. And so it is the veteran's job, or excuse me, the appellant's job to provide sufficient evidence in support of his or her claim. And in this case, we don't have that sufficient evidence, regardless of whether the court considers the NAS findings or not. Also, the secretary submits that it should be the court
okay,
and the
I'm
board.
Sorry. I'm a little slow at processing your statements here, but I want to make sure I understand. You said, I thought you said, regardless of whether the court considers the NAS value or study, that the veteran loses.
Yes, Your Honor.
Even if there is some probative value, however small it might be, for one of the medical opinions. Wouldn't that make some evidence in favor of the veteran against no evidence offered by the secretary? You see why I'm focusing on this probative value as opposed to competence and so forth?
I do, Your Honor, and I had I don't think I fully understood that before when you were asking that question. The two medical opinions that were offered here, if you follow the court's reasoning in numerous cases regarding what creates an adequate medical opinion, what's a medical opinion sufficient to support a claim for nexus, neither of these opinions, as the board found for numerous reasons, would provide sufficient evidence to support that claim. They don't have an adequate rationale. Dr. Israelson's opinion didn't adequately explain the actual type of cancer this veteran has or make any reference whatsoever to the record. Neither of them refers to, although Dr. Israelson cites some studies in his bibliography, he doesn't explain why or why not those studies support what he's saying. So for those reasons, neither of those opinions is adequate to support this claim.
Of course, the board doesn't say that.
Not explicitly, Your Honor. Finally, for the regarding the argument of the dictionary definitions, although appellant states they were not in the record, neither were any of the case sites or the regulations or any of that other information. The dictionary is used merely not as evidence, but to define terms that are already in the evidence. So that the secretary feels that that is appropriate use, as this court and the Federal Circuit and the Supreme Court has consistently done.
But, Counselor, that goes back to my question to appellant's counsel. Using the dictionary to understand what it is that the doctors are talking about or the circumstances of the case is one thing. But then once you have used those definitions and determined what they mean, then to make a determination on top of that, that is to say utilization of those definitions, is the part that bothers me a little bit. So you have basically non-medical personnel saying there's a very distinct difference between the sarcoma and the adenocarcinoma based upon what I read in the dictionary. Isn't that a medical opinion?
Well, Your Honor, as the court explained in Kahana, there are certain times when a medical inference is possible. The board can make a medical inference as long as it's supported by an independent medical basis and other information in the record. And in this case, unlike in Kahana, the board looked at these two distinct types of cancer and used the dictionary definition to define the cancers. They determined that the cancers attack two different types of cells. So it would have been the same as if the board had said lung cancer versus breast cancer. They just took it down one level to the cells, but what they did is they used those definitions with the basis in the evidence to support.
What if a particular individual had a particular type of cancer that metastasized, and it attacked both the lungs and the breast.
Absolutely. And
but then your statement that lung cancer versus breast cancer are different would not hold water, would it?
Without getting into too much of the science behind it, it's still lung cancer in the breast.
But I think that's Judge Lance's point. You illustrated it there without mm-hmm. getting into the science. So doesn't that imply that you have to apply something in addition to these two definitions to say that one excludes the other?
Yes, Your Honor. But in this case, what the board applied was the evidence of the record, where this veteran has a confirmed biopsy that was noted four different times in the record as
a
carcinoma.
Well, there's no question that he has, and I don't think anybody's questioned that he's been diagnosed with soft tissue sarcoma, right? That's what he's been diagnosed.
The other way around.
Okay. There's no question about the diagnosis. The question is whether or not those two types of cancers are or are not the same cancer, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, how are we supposed to determine that? How is the board to determine that without having definition plus? Or as you put it, without going into the science of
mm-hmm.
it?
Well, it's a fine line, Your Honor, in what the board did or didn't do. And I think if, in this case, if they were using these definitions more on it as a merits finding on what this veteran has, not so much as using it to evaluate the probative value of one of the opinions, that may have been more of a problem. But in this case, they were looking at the factual basis of this opinion and found that it contradicted other evidence in the record without an explanation of why. I mean, if Dr. Israelson had given a little more information as to why he found soft tissue sarcoma consistent versus the adenocarcinoma that was in the record, then the board may have come to a different finding. But in this case, they were evaluating the factual basis of Dr. Israelson's opinion. And again, they use it to define the terms in the record. Now, this isn't a case like in Kahana, where the board looked at the severity of the veteran's injury and whether it was in the records, whether it should have been in the records or would have been in the records. That definitely was a medical finding more along the lines of the Colvin violation. For these reasons, Your Honor, the Secretary submits the court should affirm that portion of the board decision.
I have another question.
Yes, Your Honor.
In the appellant's brief, the appellant, let me find the exact language here, since we have plenty of time. The appellant's brief on page 14 asked that if the court were to agree with the appellant, that, or it says, if the court, it's not clear, my question is not clear in my mind, and I don't want to take any more of your time to ask the question.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to cite to the course a case that is a citation that's not in the brief, and that would be the Fagan case, the Federal Circuit, 573 Fed 3rd 1282. It's a 2009 case. Fagan discusses the 5107B interpretation and what the board must consider in determining whether the evidence preponderates against the veteran. It also cites a case named Hogan for the proposition that the board's determination requires consideration of all pertinent medical evidence and all pertinent lay evidence, including medical opinions that are not determinative. So,
if the board determines that an opinion is not competent as opposed to probative, does that statute and those cases require the board to consider them?
It doesn't address that, but my view would be that the board is not required to consider evidence that is not competent. Thus, the same way the board would not be required to consider a lay statement of nexus on a medical issue. The question of what Mr. Briley, at the time of his death, prior to his death, his claim had cycled through a rating decision, notice of disagreement, statement of the case, and VA Form 9. At no point during that process did the secretary obtain a medical opinion on any of these issues. That's unfortunate. It may have resolved them in his favor, may have resolved them, resulted in an opinion against him, may have given him an opportunity to get a further clarifying opinion from his own medical experts. That didn't happen. So we're left with a record that includes evidence of each of the three criteria, each of the three requirements for service.
When did he die? Did he get his statement of the case?
Yes, he did, and he filed his VA Form 9.
And why didn't he get a clarification from his doctor at that time?
I don't believe that the... I know for sure the Dr. Campbell opinion was not of record at the time the statement of the case was issued. I would have to double-check the record. I don't think Dr. Israelson's opinion was of record at that time. But
so neither of them were of record at the time?
I do need to check whether Dr. Israelson's was. I'm not... Would you like me to take a moment to do that now? In any event, the veteran has competent evidence of record of each of the three elements that he must prove to be entitled to service connection. The question is the evaluation of the sufficiency of the evidence to support service connection. And lack of sufficiency is not just a matter of what any particular board adjudicator feels like on any particular day. We have statutory standards. They're found in the benefit of the doubt rule. The sufficiency to support service connection requires that the negative evidence must preponderate against. In this case, we would submit that the board has no negative evidence that would preponderate against the two competent medical opinions, even though they may be lacking in they may have not addressed matters that the board would have preferred that they address, but there is no medical evidence to even support the board's view that those matters are pertinent. There certainly is no medical evidence to contradict the ultimate nexus opinion found in both of those medical opinions. Under both Gilbert and Ortiz, 5107B means the secretary's evidence, negative evidence, must preponderate against. And in view of the fact that there is no evidence that preponderates against those opinions for the reason we've stated in our brief, and I certainly recognize that the court has some issues about that that have not been resolved yet, we believe that the board's finding is clearly erroneous, preponderance finding is clearly erroneous, and that the only remedy left is to grant the veterans, or rather grant the widow's accrued benefits claim. If the court has no further questions, I will.
Counselor, earlier on you made a motion to expedite based upon the condition of your client.
I did.
And does those circumstances still exist?
I have not personally talked to her. I have communicated with her service, her representative at the agency, and I am informed that she has been in the hospital for the last 60 or 90 days and has just been released to her home, but I don't have any reason to believe. Nothing was communicated to me to suggest there was an improvement in her overall condition or her likelihood of a long-term survival.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. We do have a question from Judge Hagel to the Secretary, though.
You have some time left, so I don't think I'm infringing on anything. That was precisely the question. I was looking for the language in the papers here about that. If the court were to rule in favor of the appellant, would the Secretary honor the request to expedite decision in this case, to implement the decision in this case, in order that the appellant could reap the benefit of the decision before her death?
I believe so, Your Honor. I believe this case was expedited before the board as well, before it got up to us here. So I have no reason to believe otherwise.
Is that a yes or a no?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Well, then I better get clarification. Does that mean, does that mean you're giving up a right to appeal?
May I have a moment?
Yes.
Confer with co-counsel.
Yeah. I mean, we could enter judgment, expedite judgment. If we expedite the mandate, you would lose your right to appeal. That's, I think.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe we would need to see what the court's opinion was, and then to determine if we were not going to appeal it, then we would have no objection to expediting at that point.
Would the Secretary agree? Again, this is all based upon the court ruling in the favor of the appellant. Would the Secretary agree to file its intent, its decision on its intent to appeal quickly?
As quickly as we can do so, Your Honor. We will, I
and
will, as
how?
Soon as soon as the opinion comes out, Your Honor, I personally will call our other attorneys and discuss the matter with them.
Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Any further questions? All right, the case will be submitted. We will come down and greet counsel.
All rise.